Trying. Do we have Linnell?
No. No, right? We're trying like hell, okay. But we do not have Linnell yet.
If we can't get him, we can't get him. He's a very busy man. The young fella is, he's always got something going on.
It's true.
So I did want to get to this latest. You know, we mentioned yesterday when we talked a lot about the quarterbacks list that ESPN put out. They do every position group, 11 position groups, running backs, D tackles, edge rushers, safeties, tight ends, interior offensive linemen, offensive tackles, quarterbacks. Today they did off ball linebackers. Tomorrow it's wide receivers. Will Terry be in the top 10? I'm going to guess that he will be after last year. I'm going to guess he's going to come in at like 10 or 9. Is my guess. And then corners on Thursday. Okay, so that's the rundown of this ESPN surveying of 70-plus NFL coaches, NFL front office execs, and NFL scouts. So they write about this off-ball linebacker list. The most uneven positional group of the top 10 series, linebacker is top-heavy and void of consensus. Three players appear on at least 70% of the ballots. Usually that number is much higher. Yet 32 players earned at least one vote. The top two is identical to last year, but the rest of the field is jumbled with four first-time honorees and an aging player returning to the list after a few years out of the mix. So here it goes. Off-ball linebackers. So the non-edge pass rushers slash linebackers. There's a top 10, and then there are several honorable mentions. As they mentioned, a lot of players got a lot of votes. So we would be looking at Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu, two second-team All-Pros last year. Fred Warner, number one on the list. That's where he was last year. Fred Warner's spectacular. And if he's, you know, completely healthy along with the rest of the 49ers, they are going to be good this year. Key for them is to have everybody on the field for the majority of games. Number two is Roquan Smith in Baltimore. Number three, I actually, before I saw this list early this morning, I thought this guy was going to be number one. I thought Zach Bond, the season he had in Philadelphia after signing his free agent deal in Philadelphia, I thought he had an outrageous season last year and would be number one on the list. But one of the things that I didn't realize is that he wasn't anywhere near the list last year or ever. Because he's never been ranked on this list before. Remember, he did not have productive sack years in New Orleans. But they write, Bond is emblematic of what's great about the NFL. A role player making $3.5 million 1 year can earn a $51 million deal the next thanks to an unexpected star turn. Opportunity met untapped talent when Bond joined Philadelphia as an unrestricted free agent in 2024. Vic Fangio's scheme was ideal for Bond. Remember, he moved him to middle linebacker. Once a rotational linebacker in New Orleans who earned all-pro honors thanks to 151 total tackles, 3.5 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, and 11 tackles for loss. He also appeared on nearly 90% of the ballots. One NFC exec, said, Bond didn't get a lot of defensive snaps in New Orleans, so he seized the opportunity when given a full run in Philly. His 41% run-stop win rate was first among the linebackers in top 10. Another NFC exec said, finally came into his own. He's such a versatile defender that can affect the game in multiple ways that his strength was potentially hindering him from reaching his ceiling on his early on in his career. Instead, he really mastered stacked inside linebacker play and was able to build up that foundation to take advantage of his athletic ability and playmaking. Zach Bond was so good last year. Number four on the off-ball linebacker list, Nick Bolton, Kansas City. And then number five, God, I was thrilled to see this, but I did not expect it. But I love the fact that NFL people realize how good this guy is and how much better he is going to get, I think. Frankie Louvu came in at number 5 on the list. Last year, I said many times, he may be the second best pound-for-pound player on the team after Jaden, third worst case after Jaden and Terry. Here's what they wrote about Frankie Louvu, who's never been ranked on this list before. Louvu's first year as a Commander vaulted him into the top 10 conversation. He received a few votes last year, but was largely a non-factor in the voting. But this year he appeared in the top 5 on many ballots. While some evaluators believe number 5 is rich for Louvu, he earned the votes, and this is a composite ranking. One NFL defensive coach said, quote, I have so much respect for him. He's been one of the best tone setters in the NFL. His production over the last 3 years is as good as anyone, closed quote. Head coach Dan Quinn deploys Louvu somewhat similarly to Micah Parsons in Dallas, a hybrid linebacker with pass rush ability off the edge. Louvu capitalized in a big way with 8 sacks, 12 tackles for loss, and remember this, guys, from last year, 7 pass deflections on his way to second team All-Pro honors. One NFL coordinator said, versatile, playmaking in the run game, the pass game, and with pass rush. His play style is all over the tape. One knock on Louvu, they write, he's a bit of a scheme fit. Can't play in every scheme. Can't ask him to play in man coverage consistently. That according to one NFC executive. So Frankie Louvu, in the ESPN surveying of coaches, execs, and scouts, ranking of the top 10 off-ball linebackers, Frankie Louvu's number 5. Number 6, Tremaine Edmonds in Chicago. Number 7, God, Lavonte David just keeps getting that respect. 35 years old. He comes in at 7. Here's a guy that you're going to have to keep an eye on because he's gotten hurt and he was a rookie, a second-year guy last year. DeMarvion Overshown. Remember him last year? If you were watching Dallas during the course of the season last year, he wore jersey number 0 for the Cowboys. He ended up getting hurt and missed a few games, but God, he was good last year in his rookie season for the Cowboys. He missed the 2023 season with injury. So Overshown comes in on this list at number 7 on the list. Is that where he is? Hold on, let me go back to the list. He comes in at number 8 after Lavonte David. That is a high ranking for Overshown in Dallas, but man, he was exciting to watch. Greenlaw in Denver was 9th. Quincy Williams, the Jets, at number 10. God, Quincy Williams was much higher on that list. He was a few years ago ranked number 2 on this list. All right, honorable mention was Wagner, and honorable mention. They list these in order, by the way, of votes. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is the first honorable mention. A lot of people would have preferred that he got drafted a few years back. And then Bobby Wagner. So Bobby Wagner essentially is 12th on this list. They write, the physical skills have declined, but he can compensate with all-world instincts, one AFC exec said. Still great at getting a jump on a play, doing everything you want out of a linebacker. Smart, instinctive, knows what everybody is doing. Pass coverage is where you see a little bit of a dip, which is expected at this stage, said another NFL personnel evaluator. So Washington with 2 of the top 12 off-ball linebackers in the league. Patrick Queen, DeMario Davis, Matt Milano, Logan Wilson, Jack Campbell. Olaquan in Jacksonville, Sherwood with the Jets, Franklin in Indianapolis, and Blake Cashman in Minnesota were all honorable mentions as well. So there you go. Washington's got Tunsil at number 7 on the tackle list. They've got Jaden at number 5 on the quarterback list. And they've got Louvu on the list of at number five of off-ball linebackers, with Wagner as an honorable mention, and in the rankings would have been 12th had they extended it. Sam Cosmi got others receiving votes for interior offensive linemen, and Brian Robinson Jr. got others receiving votes for running backs. Tomorrow we will get receivers, and that's a list, man, to put together. That is a tough list to put together. You know, I would, you know, I think Chase and Jefferson will be 1-2. And then, you know, the usual suspects, probably A.J. Brown, C.D. Lamb, you know, in that conversation for 3. God, I'm still not with Lamb that high. But he's great. There's no doubt about it. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where we get Terry on that list. You know, I think he was not on the list last year, but was honorable mention. I got to go back and look at previous lists. Was Terry on that list last year?
The top wide receivers list?
Last year's list. Here it is. I'm going to pull it up right now. Wide receivers last year: Jefferson 1, Hill 2, Chase 3, Lamb 4, Adams 5, Brown 6, Amon-Ra St. Brown 7, Evans 8, Diggs 9, Brandon Ayuk 10. And then Terry wasn't even honorable mention last year. Kupp, Debo, Garrett Wilson, Waddle, Devontae Smith, Nico Collins, Amari Cooper, DJ Moore were all honorable mention. Then Terry was third on the list of others receiving votes, which essentially made him last year 16th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 20th, the 22nd ranked receiver in the NFL. It's going to be much higher than that this year, no doubt. Didn't help that Sam Howell was throwing him passes in 2023. With Eric Bieniemy as the coordinator. That certainly didn't help. 2023, not Terry's best. Not the team's best either. And, you know, you got to have some level of team success. I don't know, man. I mean, I think Terry's going to be close to 10. Maybe as high as 9. He was a second-team All-Pro, right? So he was among the 6 receivers that were All-Pros. I don't know if he'll be ranked in the top 6. I would say that he will be in the top 10, though. What's your guess?
This year, I don't know. It's given the year he had last year, he should probably be somewhere kind of lower on the... I think he's probably going to be somewhere between 8 to 10 is where I would probably list him if I was going to put him on the top 10 at all.
That's where I'd have him. I think he's going to be... The highest would be 8th. The worst would be like 11th, mm-hmm. You know, like first mention first of the honorable mentions.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to be in the top 10. I think he's going to be, I think what you said is exactly where he's going to land, between 8 and 10. The All-Pro receivers last year, first team, Chase Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then the second team wide receivers, Terry, CeeDee Lamb, and A.J. Brown. He's going to be in the top 10. Has to be after last season. All right. No Linnell. That's fine. I do want to get to... I missed him. I wanted to talk some Wizard Summer League with him. Very interesting story out of the NFL related to one of the first-round picks from this past draft. Remember Shamar Stewart, Texas A&M, the guy that had no sack production at A&M? There is a chance that he may decide to try to blow up the entire first round of the NFL draft and set a precedent that I don't think the league wants to see. I'll explain what I'm talking about when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So Shamar Stewart was picked number 17 overall by the Cincinnati Bengals, the edge pass rusher out of Texas A&M, 6'5", 270. The numbers, the combine numbers, the pro day numbers were off the charts. Just an absolute freak of an athlete. He vertical jumped, I think, 42 inches. He had a ridiculous 10-yard split, incredible 40-yard. I think he ran a 4.5, 4.6, 40 at 6'5 and 270 pounds. But he had a total of 4.5 sacks in 3 seasons. Now, his pass rush rate was very good. He was explosive. He made plays. He had long arms. And people were falling all over themselves. I was a bit skeptical because you can say all you want about pass rush, you know, pressure and rates and, you know, TFLs. But when you have that few sacks over 3 years, I think it was 1.5, 1.5, and 1.5 over 3 years, there's something, especially at the college level, you got to get home. And I know they're playing SEC teams. So I was a little bit skeptical. And watching him, I remember before the draft, there was a little bit of straight line, you know, feel as an athlete, not as much, you know, sort of athletic vision. And but whatever, he was picked 17th overall by the Bengals, who still don't have Trey Hendrickson signed, as they are heading towards the beginning of training camp. So there's a story out of CBS Sports reporter Bud Elliott, who has shared that Shamar Stewart is contemplating going back to college and, you know, working out with his former team, Texas A&M, and then the idea of trying to go back to school and potentially even play and then enter the draft again next year. Elliott said, quote, "It may not be legal yet, but then again, everything in the NCAA is subject to litigation. I didn't know you could do this. I knew you could do this in baseball. I don't know why you could do it in baseball, but not football. You'll probably have to go to court." And yes, you know, there is the idea that if Stewart sued and threatened the NCAA, a rule that prevents a player who's been drafted but who hasn't signed an NFL contract from returning to college football, they could be, you know, susceptible to antitrust laws and an attack on that if he decided to go that route. Now, in the collective bargaining agreement between the players and NFL owners, the CBA actually discusses the possibility that a drafted player goes back to college rather than playing with their team. He has not signed with Cincinnati. He didn't participate in any of the offseason stuff because the, you know, pay scale apparently doesn't apply to him and his agent. He wants a different structure to his contract. But remember, you know, the CBA a while back that instituted the rookie wage scale, you know, basically slots players. That's why you don't see anywhere near over the many years since that was, I think the rookie wage scale went in 2011. Prior to 2011, you would see a lot of rookie holdouts. You just don't see that very much anymore. But the CBA contemplated this possibility, and here is the language. Quote, "If any college football player who becomes eligible for the draft prior to exhausting his college football eligibility through participation," you know what, I'm not even going to read it. Let me net it out, because it's a lot of legalese. The bottom line is, per the CBA, if Shamar Stewart returns to Texas A&M and to college football in 2025, he would still be the property, or the rights would be held by the Cincinnati Bengals in the 2026 draft. That means he would not be permitted to re-enter the draft next year. So we'll see what happens if he can sue his way back to playing at Texas A&M rather than just going to school and working out. But what's the point of it if he's going to remain, you know, if the Bengals are going to maintain his rights next year? That seems, you know, crazy. All right. Earlier, and when I say earlier, about an hour ago, the Washington Commanders now announced that Art Monk's jersey will be the jersey that will be retired in the upcoming season. The ceremony will be held on Sunday night, November 2nd, when Washington hosts Seattle in Sunday Night Football. That's also also the debut of the throwback alt uniforms. I mean, you know, Art looked great in those uniforms. And they put out a picture this morning in the tweet honoring greatness on November 2nd, and it's Art Monk in his championship 1991 uniform. I'm thrilled for Art Monk. I talked about this earlier, but now we can talk about it more and we can take some calls because I want your thoughts on this as well. So phone lines are open 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I'll net it out for you. I think Riggo should have been the next to go in, not Art. Now, again, I put together this list a while ago before they decided to officially start retiring jerseys. Remember, there was the big debate in 2020 with Dwayne Haskins taking Joe Theismann's number 7, or 2019, excuse me. And, you know, it was so poorly handled. I mean, another just complete botch job by the owner. You know, it's like what we got in the NFL draft this year in New York with Abdul Carter going number 3 overall, and Carter wanted to wear potentially number 56 if Lawrence Taylor said it was okay. And Giants management ownership stepped in and said no one's ever going to wear 56 again. And that was that. That's not what happened with number 7 back in 2019. Snyder hung Joe out to dry and said it's Joe's call. No, it wasn't Joe's call. It should have been your call, and you should have said, we don't retire jerseys, but we protect them, and Joe's number 7 is a protected jersey. Dwayne, pick another number of the available numbers. But that's not what Snyder was, as we know. He loved his quarterbacks that he picked. And so Dwayne got number 7. And during that time, there was a lot of discussion about why don't they just start retiring jerseys? And they eventually got around to doing that. But I put together a list back then in 2019, 2020, that time frame. And it's the jersey numbers that I think are without debate that should be retired. Then a list of jersey numbers that are debatable in terms of whether or not they should be retired, meaning I'd be fine if the organization decided to retire them, but I'm okay if they don't. And then there was a list of jersey numbers that were right outside kind of the debatable list. The no debaters, and I think it's a list of 7 in franchise history. 9, Sonny Jurgensen, 28, Darryl Green, 33, Sammy Baugh, 42, Charlie Taylor, 44, John Riggins, 49, Bobby Mitchell, and 81, Art Monk. That's always been my no debate. If I were on, you know, if I were part of a committee to discuss this as someone who's, you know, followed this organization and knows a lot about the history of this organization, that would be, these are the 7 that have to be retired before we ever contemplate anybody else. Now, on the debatable list, I did include Sean Taylor at 21 because of the incredible impact he made in a very short period of time. And I called that kind of an owner prerogative thing because of the circumstances around his, obviously, the death and the career that he was probably on the verge of having and the impact he had on a lot of young fans in particular. So when they decided to start retiring jerseys, on the debatable list, I included Joe's 7, Ken Houston's 27, Larry Brown's 53, Chris Hamburger's 55, Jake's, Joe Jacoby's 66, Russ Grimm's 68, and Sam Huff's 70, even though Sam Huff's best years of his career were really as a Giant. But for contributions to the organization, Sam was on the debatable list. And then just barely outside of the debatable list, I had Doug Williams, Brian Mitchell, Pat Fisher, Monty Coleman, Dave Butts, Dexter Manley, Gary Clark, and Jerry Smith. I would not retire those jerseys. I would certainly say that you could debate, but I would end up debating that they're not deserving of being retired. Ring of Honor, yes. Retired jerseys, no. So the no debate list, Sammy Baugh's was always retired. Then they got to Bobby Mitchell's. then to Sonny's, then to Daryl Green's. So there are three remaining: Charlie Taylor, John Riggins, and Art Monk. I think, you know, first of all, I don't think Sean Taylor's jersey should have ever been retired before any of the other jerseys that were recently retired. You know, Sonny's, Daryl Green's. Bobby's was retired before. Sammy Baugh's was as well. But all seven of those should have gone in before Sean Taylor's. And I will tell you that when the organization decided after Bobby Mitchell's jersey was the first to be retired, when they decided to retire jerseys other than Sammy Baugh's, and, you know, Snyder selected, along with Jason Wright and others, Sean Taylor's jersey, there were a lot of former players who were not happy about that at all. A lot of former players thought Sean Taylor's jersey should not be retired, but certainly shouldn't have been retired before Sonny, before Daryl Green, before Charlie Taylor, before Art Monk, before John Riggins. I totally agreed with it, spoke to it at the time, talked to people in the organization and told them how badly they effed that up. And they said, "You're not the first person to let us know this. A lot of former players have expressed their outrage." Not over his jersey being retired, but being retired in front of some of these others. But again, poor institutional knowledge of the organization with the last group. So here's my thing. Art Monk, 100% deserving of having his jersey retired. He's been on my short list forever. He is number one in all-time receptions. He's number one in all-time yardage. He's second in all-time pass reception touchdowns to Charlie Taylor. Charlie Taylor, just so you know, and I know many of you do know this, Charlie Taylor for his time was considered a better player in the moment than Art Monk was in his. Okay, Charlie Taylor was an 8-time Pro Bowler, you know, a Hall of Fame player pretty quickly after eligibility. Charlie Taylor, you know, during his career was considered when he retired, he was the all-time pass reception leader in an era where you didn't throw it as much. He had 649 catches. Monk, you know, decimated 649, got to 888, and also has Charlie by almost 3,000 yards, but his 14 touchdowns fewer. But Charlie Taylor was an 8-time Pro Bowler. Art Monk was a 3-time Pro Bowler. Charlie Taylor was considered a better wide receiver, started as a running back, in his career than Art Monk was. But Monk's numbers, for the most part, in two critical categories, are greater than Charlie Taylor's. I think there's a debate for Charlie Taylor to go in before Art Monk as well. But for me, there's no, honestly, bigger all-time clutch performing big game player than Riggo. Not to mention that he was, you know, considered during those years as one of the best, even though he only made one Pro Bowl. As I mentioned earlier in the show, you're talking about, you know, years in which the league just had, you know, Eric Dickerson and Earl Campbell and Tony Dorsett, you know, great running backs, Walter Payton, that did, you know, beat out Riggo for all pro honors and Pro Bowl honors. Not in 84, okay? 84, Riggo was a first-team All-Pro when he set the NFL record for rushing touchdowns. And there was a little bit of an issue with Riggo because some people considered him a fullback more than he was a halfback. But he played in the era of great running backs in both, you know, throughout the league, both conferences. And I just think Riggo should go in before Art. And I might say it a few more times between now and November 2nd, but I'm going to leave it alone after today because I don't want – Art deserves this 100%. I'm thrilled for Art, totally thrilled for Art. I've had this, you know, bug up my backside when they put Sean in before Sonny and before Daryl and before Art and before Riggo and before Charlie Taylor. I want them to get the order right. I wanted Sonny to go in, you know, certainly before Sean. You know, Charlie Taylor is not going to make it to his, you know, eventual jersey retirement, because his is coming, whether it's next year or the year after. I hope it's, you know, Riggo next year. But I think Riggo deserves to have his jersey retired right now. The order for me would have been, after Sammy Baugh, would have been Bobby Mitchell because of the significance, followed by Sonny, followed by Daryl Green. Okay? They went Bobby Mitchell, Sean Taylor, Sonny, Daryl Green. And then after Daryl Green, I would have gone Riggo, Charlie Taylor, Monk. 301-230-0980. We're all going to be, of course, no one's going to disagree that Art Monk's jersey shouldn't be retired. Of course it should be retired. I just feel like Riggo should have been next. What do you think? 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, the Washington Commanders have made an announcement that the team will be retiring Art Monk's number 81 in Week 9 against the Seattle Seahawks. The team will be wearing their Super Bowl-era throwbacks that released last week, and the Redskins legend still holds the team's career reception record. He also still holds the team record for career receiving yards. And we have a wide receiver extension. Former Ohio State Buckeye Garrett Wilson has agreed to a four-year extension with the New York Jets worth $130 million and includes $90 million in guarantees. Shamar Stewart is currently weighing his options and could make a return to college. The Bengals' first-round pick is currently in a contract dispute with the team over language regarding financial guarantees. Stewart is working out with his old college team, the Texas A&M Aggies, and believes there is a path back to the college level. Cal Raleigh last night won the home run derby. After facing off against Junior Caminero in the final, Raleigh becomes the first catcher to win the event and the first Mariner to win since Ken Griffey went back-to-back in 98 and 99. And finally, the Tampa Bay Rays are being sold for $1.7 billion in a deal agreed to in principle by owner Stu Sternberg. The deal is expected to close in September and will keep the Rays in Tampa for the years ahead. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the streams and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Art Monk's jersey will be retired on November 2nd out in Landover. Sunday Night Football, it's scheduled for now. Could always be flexed, but I think November 2nd is safe against the Seahawks at home. It'll be the debut of their throwback alt jerseys, the championship uniforms, and Art Monk's 81 will be retired on that night. Totally deserved. He's on my list of the absolute no debate jerseys that should be retired, along with Sonny, Daryl Green, both of which have been already retired. Sammy Baugh was the one that was retired for all those years. Bobby Mitchell already retired, but three left on my no debate list: Charlie Taylor, John Riggins, and Art Monk. And Monk's up next. Now, totally deserved. Art's one of the greatest of all time. He is in the conversation, and you can debate it. Charlie Taylor, Art Monk is the greatest receiver in franchise history. There's nobody else in that conversation, even though Gary Clark was a great player and it holds, most of the number three spots in the all-time franchise numbers for pass catchers list. Charlie Taylor in his day was considered to be a more, you know, high-level elite receiver. Art was always among the best, but Charlie Taylor made eight Pro Bowls, and Art made three. Art's long trek to the Hall of Fame was because there were a lot of NFL pundits and even Hall of Fame voters who kind of thought Art was more of the possession receiver, whereas Gary Clark and Ricky Sanders were more of the deep threats, or even Charlie Brown early in Art's career. Art was, to me, always a Hall of Fame receiver. Took him 13 years, eventually got there. He deserves the jersey to be retired. I just think Riggo should be next. If we're doing it based on the importance of the player, the contribution of the player, And they haven't done it that way because Sean Taylor went in before all of these people, right? So they haven't done it that way. But I think of the remaining jerseys that have to be retired, I think Riggo's should be next. I think you could actually make a case Charlie Taylor's could go before Art as well. So totally with Art, deserved, so happy for him, we'll be cheering the whole thing on. Because at the end of the day, it's just an order here that we're talking about. But I'm curious as to what you guys think, if this is something that bothers you. It doesn't bother me, but I would have insisted, had I been on a committee to discuss this, no, 44s is going next. John, you could argue, is the all-time iconic figure of players in franchise history. He is the all-time clutch performer in franchise history. Yes, he only has one Super Bowl to his credit. Been to two, won one. Art was a part of three Super Bowl winning teams. Remember, though, in 82, he didn't play in the postseason. He got injured late in the regular season and did not play in the 82 playoffs, which, by the way, it wouldn't have mattered because Riggo was rushing for 642 yards over four games, the most prolific postseason of rushing the football in NFL history, as he went on to win the Super Bowl MVP and clearly his fourth and one run to give Washington a 20-17 lead in the fourth quarter is the most important, iconic, memorable play in franchise history. So I would have gone Riggo next. That's all. What do you think? Let's start with Athan in Annapolis. Athan, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, I think it's very debatable because both are so iconic, but they have seven or eight other home games. I mean, why don't they just put Riggo in on the Dallas game? That would be perfect to do.
They're doing one a year. I guess you could do more than that, but I think the bang for the buck is to kind of spread it out here because there are only a couple left here.
Yeah, I see that, but I mean, you got two iconic players like that. I mean, I would agree with you with Riggo just slightly because of everything, but Monk was at one time the all-time NFL leader. But, you know, Kevin, one thing for your podcast, I think you could talk about another subject. What about the people who belong, maybe not in a retired jersey, but the Redskins Ring of Honor, Doc Walker and Mark May being one and two of them? Doc's got 50 years in this market.
No doubt.
45 in the media and 5 as a player. So I know you got other callers, but thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, well, the Ring of Honor, obviously, you get a lot more people involved in the conversation. But yeah, Doc would certainly be at the top of that list for sure. You know what, guys? Stay there on hold. Terry McLaurin is talking after an Eastern Motors commercial shoot. We're going to go to it live right now.
They've taken whatever tack they've taken, and have you now opened your mind up to being somewhere else?
You know, I haven't got to that part yet. It has been disappointing. Going into this offseason, I thought there was going to be more progress. And, you know, I know those discussions were there at the beginning. And, you know, kind of since OTAs and minicamp, you know, we haven't had any discussions. We haven't talked at all. And, you know, that's tough, you know, obviously with camp coming around the corner. And so I haven't thought that far yet to really, you know, see what's next in the standpoint of leaving or not, you know, because I want to be here. I want to make that abundantly clear. Like, I really appreciate this fan base, this city, this place has become my home. You know what I mean? I've poured a lot of myself and given everything that I can every single day since I've been here through the wins, losses, good, bad. And, you know, but at the end of the day, you do want to feel valued and you do want to feel appreciated. And I think, you know, how the market is today, it pretty much conveys what guys of my caliber are deserving of, and I feel like I fit that in that box because of just how I've always carried myself on and off the field and the value I know I bring to a team, and I know I bring to my teammates, and I know that I bring to an organization. And you know, I don't want to put myself in a position to feel like you have to beg for somebody to see your worth and your value. You feel like you've put that out there year in, year out, you know what I mean? Everything previous regimes and even now. You know, I mean, I've done everything that's been asked of me. I'm not perfect at all. I've definitely made mistakes, but I've always led with the right foot. And I've tried to put myself in a position to be a person that can be valued and respected amongst his coaches and his teammates, but also be a dog on the field. I don't want to get that mistaken. Like, I feel like I'm one of the best receivers in this league. And, you know, it's not because of me just feeling that way. I feel like I've proven that, and I'm going to continue to work hard to prove that. And that's kind of where things are. So I haven't really, you know, gotten to the part of trade or not. Like, I want things to work out, but at the end of the day, like, it takes two to tango, you know what I mean? So however things go these next few days, I know camp's around the corner. I'll talk to my agent and we'll go from there. But overall, you just want to be appreciated and valued for who you are and what you bring to the team, and also what you feel like you could continue to do, because best believe I don't feel like I played my best ball yet, and I still feel like I have a lot of great things that I can do and bring to a team. And so you know, it's disappointing that it's gotten to this point. And the toughest part is being away from my teammates, honestly, you know, because I came into part of OTAs and things like that with the assumption things were going to progress a lot quicker than they have. And it's disappointing because I've always been a team guy and a leader. And the great thing about, you know, the great thing I take away is I've gotten a lot of support from my teammates. I've played golf with them. I've hung out with them. I've talked to multiple guys, and they know where I stand. They know how I feel. And I think the tough part is they have to decipher things through the media. And, you know, they know I'm an open book. So everybody I've talked to, I've been 100% open and honest with them of where I stand and how things have been. And so I know I got their respect and their support, and I'm going to continue to prove that when I'm on the field, whenever that time is. So, you know, just because I'm in this scenario doesn't change the fact of who I am and my character, because I'm going to continue to be Terry McLaurin no matter where I'm at. And that's who's God's built me to be. That's who I've tried to prove who I am, and I'm going to continue to walk in that.
Terry, what needs to happen next to get this thing back on track?
Well, I think, you know, there has to be some active discussions, you know what I mean? Like I said, we haven't talked in over a month, and obviously with camp around the corner, like, it's becoming a little bit of crunch time. And, you know, obviously you want to be in a position where you're building to what we did last year, and Jaden and I continue to build along with the offense. And that was the thing, like, before I took a step back, it was things were going great on the field, and you know, the connection and the offense and the energy was just amazing. And so to see where it was then and where it's at now is definitely disappointing. So I don't necessarily know what happens next, but without any progressive discussions, it's kind of hard to see how I step on the field. So you know, I'm just trying to take it day by day, honestly, and I know the value that I bring. And again, I understand that there's a whole business and things like that, but I know that I'm going to continue to play at a high level. The Lord has blessed me to stay healthy up until this point. I haven't missed a game in 5 years. You know, I haven't missed practices. I block. I play full game. You know what I mean? And so I take extreme care of my body. Anybody in that building knows that, whether it's rehab, off the field, I invest a lot of time and money into my body. And I'm going to continue to do that so I can be the best that I can when I step on the football field. So I can't really speculate what happens next. Again, I just got to take things day by day, stay in contact with my agent, and hopefully that we can have some sort of talks that are progressive. But if not, then, you know, then you have to take steps from there.
Understanding it's a business, is it hard for you to separate the business from the emotion here?
Of course. You know, I mean, to a certain degree, when you feel you have a way of feeling that what you've proven up until this point, and when you see that is put in front of you of how somebody perceives you or values you, that's disappointing. You know what I mean? It's a little bit disrespectful to me. And again, like, the front office, the ownership, they have to do what's best for the team. I understand that, but I also know what I bring to a team. And I feel like I've proven that day in, day out. There hasn't been anything that they've asked me to do since they've been here that I have not done willingly, openly. And I'm not saying that's what I'm supposed to do as a leader. But you would think when that is displayed consistently over years of time, then that would be, you know, honored and respected. And so, again, the toughest thing is just, you know, having to be in this limbo. And but I haven't stopped working. You know, I work my tail off, and no dollar amount is going to change that. No dollar amount is going to make me work harder. That's not how I'm built. But at the same time, I have to stand on my worth and my value. You know, I've worked really hard to create that, and I know the person that God has blessed me to be. And I know that I'm a leader in that locker room. And when you have that kind of person who brings what I bring on the field, off the field, in the community, I feel that's somebody that should be valued at a very high level. Fortunately, you know, I've proven that, but unfortunately, you know, you can't force somebody to see value. You know what I mean? And we just got to see where that goes from here. But that's just the disappointing part, because you feel like you've done the things right. You've bought into the T of everything that this culture was building last year. And, I thought it was definitely going to be into the future of that. And so, again, I have not make any declarations of one way or another, but I'm just kind of speaking on how it's made me feel, how this offseason been, the frustrations I felt. That's all true. You know what I mean? That's not just what people are hearing. Like, it's coming from me. And definitely I want to just continue to take things day by day and see where it goes from there.
If teams don't progress, do you know how you all approach camp?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I haven't decided that yet. I'm trying to take things day by day. And, I think that's the disappointing part, where I was hoping up until this point things would clear up a lot more than they have. And so I haven't made that decision yet. And I'm just going to see how the rest of this week goes and take it day by day and go from there.
Going through even yesterday with Wilson getting his contract.
Yeah.
Do you think the market has been pretty well set at that position, and where do you think you fit in that market?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, Garrett Wilson deserves what he was paid. You know, I know I'm a little biased being a Buckeye, but he's a great player, and he brings a lot to his team, and he's fought through adversity as well, and I feel like that his team, not only from the past regime, but, you know, the new regime that they have now, they honor and they see that, and they see what he brings to the team, and they compensate him as such. And so I can't really speculate on how that necessarily affects me. He's different than I am. But at the end of the day, like, what top receivers are compensated in today's NFL, wide receiver ones, I feel like I am that. And I feel like that has displayed itself not only just this cycle of receivers who have signed, but last year, you know. And I know I'm in that category, and so it's just a matter of seeing if it makes sense for myself and if the team feels like it makes sense for them. But, you know, it's hard to say, like, how that transpires from here. But I know I'm deserving of what I'm asking for, and I'm willing to stand firm on that. And, you just kind of got to see where it goes from there. You know, they feel how they feel, and I feel you hope you can come to some sort of understanding and common ground. You know what I mean? I'm not a combative person, but I am someone who's going to stand on my worth and know what I bring to a team. Not because of, oh, I feel that way. It's because what I've proven year and year and year, and what I know I will continue to prove, Lord willing, to keep me healthy as I've been. And, the tough part is just missing the time and feeling like you've missed out on building with your teammates and your quarterback and the new additions. And each team and each year is different. So when I feel like, you know, I'm a missing piece of that, you know what I mean? I feel like that definitely affects the team, you know what I mean? And hearing from my teammates and see how they feel. And, you know, they're confused and as well. So it's just not a lot of clarity, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, I just want clarity, you know what I mean? If they don't feel like I'm part of their future, then okay, just tell me that. You know, I'm a grown adult. I can handle hard truths, you know what I mean? What I've been through in my life, I've definitely been through tough things, been through adversity, been through situations where people may not have saw my value, and that's okay, but somebody will, and I'm gonna continue to give them my all, whoever feels that way.
Terry, considering how last year for this team so much was the good vibes that led to what the season became, does that make it even more surprising based on what you're saying as to that you're here? It sounds like it's not even just money definitively, it's other aspects too.
Definitely. You know what I mean? It's obviously the compensation, but it's kind of like the confusion. You know what I mean? All year you feel like you're a part of something. You earned the right to be a captain. You were selected by your teammates and coaches and honored at that. Throughout the season, through the ups and the downs, through the growing process of, you know, a new offense, a new coaching staff, a young quarterback, all these things. And I just tried to lead with the right way. I didn't complain. You know what I mean? Things didn't go my way. Like, or we had tough stretches of time. Like, I was knee deep in it with everybody. And coming into the playoff stretch, like, I know I put my best foot forward on and off the field. And so when you have that type of production, when you know how people value you and see you and have told you to your face, and then you see how it's progressed up to this point. That's very disappointing. And you feel a little bit confused. And so at this point, I'm just trying to get some clarity on that. Like, just shoot it to me straight, honestly. You know what I mean? But I know what I bring to the table, and I know what I'll continue to bring if given the opportunity. And so, that's the disappointing part, because you thought it was going to go one way, and now you're here. So it's like, how'd that happen? And again, it's big business in the NFL, but also, you know, when a player proves who they are over a course of time, and it's not just myself, but just in general, of NFL players as a whole, when you've proven who you are, you want that to be honored, you want that to be respected, you want that to be valued. And my value is so much more than a dollar amount, and that's how I feel about myself. But I'd be remiss to not acknowledge that in our business, the dollar amount is attached to someone's value, and I just want that to be reflective of who I am.
When you left after OTAs, did you get a strong indication from them that communication would continue, that discussions would progress?
Definitely, and that was a big reason why I came. You know, in 2022, like, that was a completely different situation, but that during that time, like, I left very early because the communication just wasn't there. And so when I came up into this offseason program of wanting to build on what we did last year, first and foremost, and be with my teammates, like, that was my intention, and feeling everybody in the building knew how engaged I was. But also, there's a business side and component to it. And when you've been communicated that you want to get a deal done, you want to progress, and those aren't happening, like, you know, frankly, like, actions do speak louder than words. And that's the same that goes for me. Like, if I go out and say, I want to be this player, I want to do this and do that, but my habits and my actions don't reflect behind that, then people are going to be looking at me sideways. And so I felt like I led with the best foot forward. And, after that kind of wasn't progressing the way that we would have liked, I just felt like I needed to take a step back. And that was the disappointing part. But I got to look out for myself as well. Like, I have a family, you know what I mean? I have my wife and future kids at some point, and I want to honor them with my value as well, and I know what I bring to the table. And so that's kind of how it got to this place, where I was understanding that things were going to progress and they just haven't. And that's disappointing. And on the heels of camp, it's kind of like, what now? And so I just want clarity, honestly, and we'll see where it goes from here. So with the deadlines obviously come up, and we'll see where it goes from there. But without any progressive talking, without any communication, it's kind of just sits here like it is.
Is there like a point of no return?
I'm not going to really speculate on that yet. Obviously, where it stands now, it's not great. It's not good at all. And without any progression, then you have to take steps based off of where you're at. You know what I mean? There's a hope that I do want to continue to play here. And I do want to be a part of what's being built and what's going to be built. But at the same time, you want to be valued by the front office and the ownership group and things like that. And, it's just past just the words of it. It's, the actions behind it. And I feel like I've proven who I am and who I'm can continue to be. You know what I mean? And at some point, I guess you can say there's a point of no return. I don't think it's at that now, but there's a, time is kind of ticking.
What is the disconnect as you see it? Is it just, beyond how they're treating you, the tone perhaps, is it just money? Is it your age? I know that's been mentioned at the time. What do you see as the disconnect?
I'll try to keep the specifics of it between, my agent and the team, but, I think there is a disconnect of the value of what I bring to the table and how that applies to not only the fair market deal and the fair market value, but what I've proven up until this point and what I still know I can do at a very high level. And just speaking to the point of, you bringing up age, like, obviously that is a part of the NFL. Father Time is undefeated. But I think it's unfortunate that a general data point, not just for myself, but in general, is just used and not by a case-by-case basis. In my case, I've been blessed by the Lord and the actions that I take to take care of my body. I've never had a major surgery in my entire career. Thank God for that, and on top of the work that I put in. But also, I haven't missed a game in four or five years, and I don't miss practice. I play every game, and so who's to say, coming off this last season, I won't continue to play at a high level? I believe that. I truly do, and I know I'm going to put the work in to continue to do that at a high level and be bought in and be unselfish and be the guy that I know I've, I've been. And to be quite frank with you, like, you know, even when it comes to guys who are approaching 30, like, my case is different, not only from a health standpoint, but this is only going to be my seventh year. A lot of people may not know my story, but at Ohio State, I really didn't play a lot my first 2 years. There's not a lot of tread on my tires. This is the first year we made a deep playoff run. You know what I mean? And I've been extremely healthy through all of that. And so to just I'm not under the understanding that 30 just applies to me. I'm not dismissing that completely. You know what I mean? There are data points that support that. But how come it's not okay to honor and see, okay, this may be a different case? And based on what he's proven and showing no signs of deterioration, like, you know, I feel like that should be acknowledged as well. And so in general, you hope that there's a case-by-case basis and not a group thinking of, hey, this is this age group and, you know, they fit in this age group, so this is how we're going to treat them. I don't think that's quite right. It's the business. It's depending on how each organization and front office see it. So, you know, that's kind of how that is. But, you know, 30 ain't old. You know what I mean? People making it seem like I need to start getting fitted for a walker and a cane. You know what I mean? No disrespect. You know what I mean? Because with age comes wisdom. You know what I mean? And I think my game is going to continue to mature in a great way as I go out through the course of the end of my career. And I don't think that's right now. I don't think that's near. And my ability to make catches at the catch point, people call it contested catches. I call it winning at the catch point. You know what I mean? I think that'll continue to stay. My speed, I still am a 4-3 guy. I'm the same guy just in January, you know, was able to take a slant in the NFC Championship game in a screen for a touchdown. I don't think that changes in 6 months, especially without no major injuries. And so, you know, I know that was a long, drawn-out answer, but I just wanted to kind of, you know, address that standpoint. But the specifics of the negotiations, I want to keep, you know, in-house as much as possible. But just speaking to the point of age and things like that, and I kind of just want to touch on that.
What you mentioned you've been in communication with your teammates throughout the course. What has that been like? How do you kind of stay abreast of what they're doing from afar? Sure.
Well, the great thing about it is I've talked to, you know, a lot of them, and offense, defense, you know, they've communicated that they miss me. They communicated that they want me out there, but they also understand it's a business as well, and they understand what I bring to the table, and they're supporting me and standing firm in that. And that means a lot to me, because at the end of the day, I want their respect, and they know who I am as a person and as a player. And that's not just because of I'm saying that. It's what I've tried to prove myself each and every day while I'm in that building. The person I am, pouring into the young guys, being a veteran leader and buying into a new regime and what they want to build in the ownership group as well. I've bought in completely. And, you know, the tough part is just being away from them, because the camaraderie that's in that locker room is special. And you want to build on what you had last year and take it to the next level. And so not being there, that is the gap. But I know I have their support. I know that they got my back. And if the shoe's on the other foot, like, I'd have their back as well. And, you know, I think just in general with football and when it comes to contract negotiations, like, when if the shoe's on the other foot and I'm sitting here and was selfish and wasn't productive last year, like, teams in those situations, they cut players, so they're asking for pay cuts. But when a guy earns it, like, it's just disappointing when there's that, just that, you know, that combativeness, that drawn out process where you feel like, okay, you've earned something, let's compensate you and not have this long drawn out process. It's a business. I do understand that, but it's just the disappointment in it. But, you know, I'm blessed. You know what I mean? I keep my head held high. I know who I am at the end of the day. I know who God has blessed me to be. And I, you know, that doesn't change based off of how somebody else may feel or view me. I know how I view me. I know how the people in my life, I know how my teammates view me. And it's just tough to be away from them, but they know that I'm handling business. And the great thing about it, they trust and know based off of what they've seen and being around them, that I've been putting the work in. And whenever my time to step on the field, I'm going to continue to be who I've been and continue to get better, because I do know I can continue to get better like I've shown.
Terry, have you heard from Jaden specifically?
Yeah, I have.
Klarn, who's holding a press conference after an Eastern Motors advertising shoot.
And I'll keep the specifics between us, but yeah, it's great to have his support, honestly, and to know that he has my back, and to see how we've grown in our relationship, not just on the field but off the field. And so to know the value you bring to your quarterback and to know that he sees and feels that, that means a lot to me. It really does. And he knows I got his back too, not on the field but as a person. We've had a lot of personal, you know, talks, not just now but over the course of his entire first year together. Mm-hmm. And him and I haven't scratched the surface as what we can do as a duo, you know what I mean? From, you know, we as a team, we had a slow start to the season. We had some hiccups, but we were cooking by the end of the year, you know what I mean? And I feel like with the additions that have been made as well, like that is only going to help everything. But I know what I bring to the table, and I feel like he does too. And I truly believe we need each other. And so we'll see where it goes from there. I'm going to continue to talk to him. And stay in contact with him because, you know, he's a great player, but he's even a better person. So when you got guys like that, you know, Zach, Frankie, Quan, Reeves, just to name just a few guys who have reached out and checked in on me and see how I'm doing and say they support me and got my back, that means a lot. And they know I'll do the same for them because if they didn't, I don't think they would reach out. You know, I mean, that's the thing. You can't BS. You could – you know, I'm going to shoot straight. Some guys could kind of BS the media. You could portray yourself on social media a certain way. You can't BS the guys in that locker room. They know who you are. They know what you bring to the table. They know over a consistent amount of time the character and the person you are. And so to see that those guys see that in me and they want me to be a part of what's being built means everything to me. And I just want to be, you know, back with them and build, if that makes sense.
How much has ownership been involved to this point? And do you feel that it's – How's that relationship going for you?
Yeah, I mean, in the past, the relationship has definitely been great. You know, I mean, I've had personal, you know, conversations with Josh. I've had personal conversations with Mitchell Rails, Mark Hine, Magic, you know. And so up until this point, my understanding is, like, I'm a big part of what they want to continue to build here. There hasn't been any personal communication. You know, I mean, you know, Mitchell Rails and I kind of had a, you know, a few texts back over the offseason, but it wasn't like contractual. But, you know, I think there's personal relationships that I've built there, and I just want them to, you know, be clear with me and honest, you know what I mean, of if they see me as part of this future or not, you know what I mean, and I can handle that, and we move forward. But I'm hoping that they see who I've been, not even just before DQ and AP got here, but who I was when it was terrible. You know what I mean? When things were adverse, when there was a lot of chaos going on, I still held firm and strong. And I held my head held high, and I was a leader. You know what I mean? I'm going to continue to do that when things are good. Like, things are good or bad doesn't change who I am. Money doesn't change who I am. It's the character of who I've proven to be. And so hopefully, you know, they see that value, and, you know, they make that a priority to get some finality to this. One way or another.
Two more questions.
I know you did some traveling.
Yeah.
But where have you worked out generally, aside from that?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked out in Florida over the off season. That's kind of my place that I go to work out. I've worked out here. Obviously, when I wasn't missing out on OTAs, you know, I have weight room in my house, and I haven't missed any days. I'm 208 pounds sitting right here, healthy as hell. Fast, you know what I mean, and good spirits. And that's the thing, like, the money is not what motivates me. It's to be the best person I can be on the field, to bring out the best in myself. I want to be able to walk away from this game knowing that I gave everything I got, that I stayed true to who I was, that I didn't, you know, sell out or try to tear somebody down to build myself up. I've taken my L's and my licks on the chin, you know what I mean? And I haven't complained, and I stay strong during that. And I put in the work no matter what's going on around me. And so I've definitely worked out here. I've worked out in Florida, and I was in Italy getting it in, waking up at 6 a.m., you know what I mean? For real, you know what I mean? And you know, that's just who I am. And I know when I step on the field, whenever that time comes again, like, I'm going to be ready. And I know I put the work in to build off of what I did last year. And so I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, even on Chad Englehart's birthday, I sent him a picture of, you know, the squat rack with 435 on it. Just tell him happy birthday. You know what I mean? Just that's just who I am. And people in that building know that. And it's who I've been. That's who I'm going to continue to be.
How was Italy?
It was beautiful. My wife and I had a great time. That was my first time in Europe. And just to see the architecture, to see the history was really cool. And just, you know, I'm really blessed to be able to be in this position to be able to not only meet great people, but to earn a great living, living my dream and seeing the world. Like, I never, and I don't want to get emotional, but I never saw my life coming this far. My dream was always to make it to the league, but I never saw the position I'd be in today and the respect I'd have from this community, these people who I've just given my heart to, and they gave it to me back. You know what I mean? And but yeah, Italy was amazing. Went to Rome, went to Amalfi Coast, Positano. We went to Florence. We went to Venice. I learned some great Italian. I had a great Italian food. I think I'm good off of.
Let's hear some of that great Italian.
Okay. I just know basic stuff. So, like, all right. But I think, you know, bene is just something that means good. Like, you know, bene, you know? So, like, how you do? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, bene, buongiorno. The people in Florence are very personable. So, you know, I'm coming down the steps, buongiorno. Buongiorno. You know? So it's like, let me get you back. Buongiorno, you know? So my wife was kind of correcting me. They make great espresso over there. I've never been a coffee guy. And so I started having some espresso. I was calling it espresso. And my wife was like, it's espresso. Yeah. And so, like, I made sure I got that right. But it was a great experience. And, you know, it's actually kind of crazy. Like, I'm a low-key guy, you know what I mean? And over there, I was getting recognized, like, left and right.
Really?
Yeah, like, by, obviously, travelers and football fans. But, one of our servers at the place that we stayed in Positano, he was like, yeah, you play American football. You big guy. So everybody's asking me, like, you know, you see a big guy, and I'm, you know, in the hotel we were, there's big running steps. So I'm running the steps from the top to the bottom. And they're like, who are you? What do you do? You know what I mean? And so just ingratiating myself into that culture with my wife and creating new experiences and great memories and meeting great people was something that was unbelievable. And definitely am glad to be back and figure out what's next.
So I can do two non-contractual.
Yeah.
Art Monk announced today that he's going in as jersey's being retired as a fellow receiver. I'm not sure how much you've dealt with Art, but your thoughts on 81 being never worn again?
Man, as it should be. You know, he's the greatest receiver that has played in our organization, in my opinion. He's a Hall of Famer for a reason. And, you know, I think a few years ago, Gary Clark, Ricky Sanders, Art Monk, just to name a few, we all went to dinner at Prime in Ashburn. And, you know, my understanding was, you know, Art is a chill, laid-back guy back in Florida. And so for him to come out and spend his time and spend his wisdom with us was something that I couldn't – you can't put a dollar amount on that. And I still take away the conversations we had at that dinner – unbelievably.
All right, we are going to bail on it. There's only another question left. Terry's last few are all about his Italy trip and Art Monk's retired jersey announcement earlier today. There was a lot to it. Bottom line is he is very frustrated, irked at the whole process, and you can tell he's lost some trust in the process as well. Talked a lot, though. There's a lot to get to. Chris will tackle it next. I'll be back tomorrow to discuss it. Enjoy it. Back tomorrow. See you.